May it please the court. My name is Rachel Milos. My attorney registration number is 47176, and I represent Christopher Mayo. I plan to focus on the first issue, but if this court has any questions about the instructional issue, I would be happy to answer those as well. Because this case hinged on credibility, the prosecutor's repeated misconduct, which began during opening argument, which continued through the direct examinations of Mr. Navarez and Mr. Martinez, in which permeated the prosecutor's closing argument, deprived Mr. Mayo of a fair trial by an impartial jury. In this case, the prosecutor expressly vouched for the credibility of Mr. Martinez, the state's key witness. He injected his own credibility into the trial and pitted it against that of Mr. Navarez. He denigrated Mr. Mayo by calling him a savvy criminal repeatedly during his closing argument, and he expressed his personal opinion about Mr. Mayo's guilt. I'd like to focus on the prosecutor's comments during closing argument. 8 times during closing argument, the prosecutor referred to Mr. Mayo as a savvy criminal. The implication behind the statement was that Mr. Mayo had committed crimes just like this in the past, that he had stolen goods and that he had gone with Mr. Carlson and with Mr. Navarez to pawn shops and he had pawned stolen goods in the past. But there— He didn't say that specifically, but his comments that Mr. Mayo was a savvy criminal who knew just what to do to avoid getting caught. He made clear to the jury by asking Mr. Mayo during his direct examination that Mr. Mayo had gone to pawn shops in the past, that Mr. Mayo had pawned goods in the past, and that Mr. Mayo had driven Mr. Carlson and Mr. Navarez to pawn shops in the past. The question on the table was really, did Mr. Mayo know that they were going to pawn stolen goods at this time? Did Mr. Mayo know that this crime was going to be committed? And by sort of implying to the jury that he had this criminal history, it really was there to convince the jury that Mr. Mayo had done this before and that he was so savvy that he had to avoid receiving a felony conviction.
I guess what I'm having trouble understanding, where does that suggest that he had a criminal history? Doesn't it equally suggest, and I think their questions were asked, he knew that they'd asked for his driver's license and fingerprints or something like that, and so he didn't go in the store, he just drove, and therefore he knew how to avoid detection. That doesn't necessarily imply, does it, that he did it in the past, or that he just knew on this occasion that that was a way to act to protect himself?
I think for me, this case is just like People v. Jones, this court's decision there, where the prosecutor referred to the defendant in that case as a sneak thief and said that the theft at issue in that case was a James Keith Jones type of job. And the court said that that was reversible error based on that prosecutorial misconduct because it implied to the jury that the defendant had been guilty of criminal conduct like that in the past. Mm-hmm. I think here by saying he's a savvy criminal and he knew just what to do to avoid getting caught and made clear to the jury that he had driven them to the pawn shop in the past, I think that was exactly what the prosecutor was intending to imply by using this refrain over and over again during his closing argument.
And that wasn't fixed when the defense counsel said his only conviction in the past is DUI or something like that.
I think it's almost made worse by that because the jury may have then been led to speculate, well, what does the prosecutor know that we don't know? And I think because the jury knew in this case that the prosecutor had intimately participated in the investigation, he made clear to the jury that he had participated in the pretrial interview of Mr. Navarez, they may have believed that the prosecutor had information about Mr. Mayo's criminal history, that maybe he knew that Mr. Mayo had the theft charges brought against him in the past, but those charges had been dismissed, and that's why that felony conviction was not in his record, and that's why it wasn't before the jury. So I think the harm there is that the jury may have thought, well, you know, speculation-wise, maybe we should believe that the prosecutor has information that's unknown to us, and that's why he's making this analogy to Mr. Mayo being considered a savvy criminal.
Well, the problem that I'm having, sorry to interrupt, is you're inferring or speculating a lot of what the jury may have speculated. And if we just look at the comment, I'm having a hard time understanding from the comment why that might not just be referring to this particular occasion.
Well, I think it's important to not just look at this comment, and it wasn't a single isolated comment. It was used 8 times. I think also if we look at the other comments that were made by the prosecutor in closing argument, how he kept referring to Mr. Mayo, Mr. Carlson, and Mr. Navarez as a group who were thick as thieves that had no secrets from one another. I think that statement as well, that was used 10 times and was really the theme of the prosecutor's closing argument. He began his closing argument with that, and then he finished his rebuttal closing with that same phrase. I think the danger there is that, you know, he's implying to the jury they're so close they have no secrets. There's nothing in the record to support a finding that they were so close that they had no secrets from one another. In fact, Mr. Carlson and Mr. Navarez both testified that they thought that Mr. Mayo did not know about the theft, that they planned it, they didn't plan it, that they thought about it in the middle of the night. It was something that was a spur of the moment thing that came up in the middle of the night with Mr. Martinez. And so by using this repeated refrain over and over again, thick as thieves, a group that have no secrets from one another, he was again encouraging the jury to find that Mr. Mayo must have had the requisite knowledge.
Counsel, excuse me for interrupting, but insofar as the other, Mr. Carlson and so on, there was evidence, was there not, that they gave inconsistent statements prior to the trial?
Yes.
That, right.
Absolutely.
And so it would be a question of fact for the jury to determine whether or not they're telling the truth at a prior statement or at the time of trial.
I think that's true, but I do think that Mr. Carlson never made any statements before trial indicating that Mr. Mayo had planned the theft, that Mr. Mayo had discussed the theft, that Mr. Mayo had encouraged him to commit the theft. He did say before trial at one point when he was interviewed for the first time by Detective Obuchina, he did say that, Mr. Mayo stole the laptops and I saw those at his house. But he admitted that he scapegoated Mr. Mayo in that situation because Mr. Mayo was the only one that had not been interviewed by Detective Obuchina, and he knew this. And that testimony isn't even consistent with the testimony of Mr. Martinez and Mr. Navarez, because Mr. Navarez admitted that he took the laptops from the house. And Mr. Martinez, who was the state's key witness, testified that he never saw Mr. Mayo take anything from the house. So his testimony, I would say, really was consistent. Mr. Carlson said beforehand when he was interviewed by Investigator Sagar and by the prosecutor that Mr. Mayo never encouraged him, he never planned the theft, he never participated in the theft. So his testimony was consistent, I would say, before and during trial. Mr. Navarez was all over the place. That is true. But even in his pretrial interview that he had with Investigator Sagar and with the prosecutor, he initially said that Mr. Mayo never cased the house, Mr. Mayo never specifically pointed out anything for him to take. It was only after the prosecutor and Investigator Sagar kind of brought up the fact that he was on probation and that he better be completely truthful that he sort of changed course and then sort of made some statements, Mr. Mayo may have been present when we had this discussion about taking things from the house. But for the most part, the testimony of Ms. Zakari, Mr. Carlson at trial, Mr. Navarez at trial, and Mr. Mayo at trial were all supported the finding that he had no prior knowledge that this theft was going to be completed at all. At this point in time, I think I'm going to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal unless this court has any additional questions. Thank you.
You have about 7 minutes.
Great.
May it please the court and counsel, Paul Kaler, 192-10 for the people. As we know, plain error in a prosecutorial misconduct situation is extremely hard for a defendant to demonstrate. And I don't think it's even a close situation here. Of course, both counsel may refer to the evidence, may make reasonable inferences from the evidence, and may use rhetorical devices or rhetorical embellishment and metaphorical nuance, although I'm not sure I've ever seen metaphorical nuance in a closing argument very well. Everything here, I think, was based on the evidence that the defendant was the leader, that he was a savvy criminal and was thick as thieves. I think it all comes clearly from the evidence and is based on reasonable inferences that can be made from the evidence. First of all, the house sitter was his ex-girlfriend. He got to seduce her, and that got to spend up while his friends were committing the crime. He slept with her upstairs. I mean, there was evidence that the car they used was his car, was his baby. And when he went upstairs, he left his keys downstairs where his friends could use those keys to load the stolen things into the car. Also, I think he was familiar with the pawning process, and he allowed his friends to carry the items out, but he allowed them to pawn them at the pawn shop so that he was not identified as being with them and with those particular materials. Also, during the investigation of the case, the defendant still had the laptops in his possession, indicating that he was keeping control of the items that were taken during this theft. I think all of these factors.
He called the police and said, I have these stolen laptops or something.
Once he knew that the investigation was on the way, was underway. Once he knew the investigation was going, he said, I still have these. Would you like these? I think he was.
So that's evidence of a savvy criminal?
I would think so. He says, I've got these things. And he's attempting to get himself out from under the investigation. I think that's savviness, at least in the mind of a criminal. There was some, certainly, if criminals did everything that was smart, I'd never be standing up here talking to this court. They make mistakes all the time. That's how we catch them. But in his mind, he could think that volunteering this stuff, getting him out from under the investigation, letting his friends hold the bag on the crime, I think that's being savvy, at least in the mind of a criminal like this. Also, the thick of thieves, too, is based on the fact that two of his friends changed their pretrial or investigative statements by the time they got up on the witness stand. I think that showed that they were getting back into, you know, what they call the prisoner's dilemma. Where if you all hold together, there's a greater chance of getting away. I think they were holding together, and that was a way of showing that they were thick as thieves, that they were sticking together and staying united as a group and hoping to protect Mr. Mayo at that time. That's all I have to say, really. I'd like to address any concerns the court might have on anything else.
I'm a little concerned about the complicitor issue. I don't know if I really understand the defendant's argument, but I understand that he may have been found liable as a complicitor, as opposed to an accessory after the fact, and there is a difference.
Oh, sure, certainly.
Okay.
Accessories help.
And if he didn't know until they drove to the pawn shop that there had been a theft committed, and there is an argument to that, should the jury have been explained the difference between complicitor liability and accessory after the fact liability?
I'm not sure that was one of the questions. The question was I think the one issue, obviously the first two issues are the ones where defense counsel helped in formulating the answer. The third one has to do with whether
the crime was completed, I think.
Right, whether he could be guilty of theft by receiving. And the trial court said the only charge before you is the theft thing. I think the straight answer, Your Honor, is that if you look at the complicity instruction and if you look at the theft instruction, all the verbs are used in the past tense. I think by referring the jury to those things, the jury could see that the crime had to have been over when they took control of the property and left from the house. I don't think there is any way a reasonable juror could have looked at the multiple uses of the past tense and decided that theft was some sort of continuing crime that could have lasted until, I can't even remember when it was, the how many days or it was the next day when the goods were pawned. But clearly, the use of the past tense repeatedly in both the theft and the complicity instructions made sure that the jury knew that the crime was over when they left the house.
So that Mr. Mayo had to know by the time they left the house that these goods had been stolen.
Correct. I think that was clear. And it was also clear from the prosecution's theory that he left his keys down for the purpose of them loading up his stuff, and then he kept the babysitter ex-girlfriend occupied upstairs, so that gave them a sufficient time to look for and carry things off.
I missed that point. I understand what you're saying about that. Okay.
Thank you very much for your time.
Just a couple of points. First, I wanted to talk about the plain error standard of review. Obviously, this court is reviewing for plain error, and while it doesn't reverse regularly for plain error based on claims of prosecutorial misconduct, this court has done so when that misconduct is repeated and pervasive, when no curative instructions are given by the court, and where there is a reasonable possibility that these errors contributed to Mr. Mayo's conviction. In this case, I would disagree, and I would say that the evidence against Mr. Mayo was not overwhelming. Ultimately, even in the Attorney General's answer brief, they conceded that this was a credibility determination between Mr. Martinez's story and his version of events and that of Mr. Mayo. Yes, other witnesses testified as well, but their testimony was in dispute. So ultimately, by expressly vouching for the credibility of Mr. Martinez, by telling the jury that Mr. Martinez is the one who is telling you the truth, by denigrating Mr. Mayo and really pitting his own credibility against that of Mr. Navarez, implying to the jury that they should believe his pretrial version of events as opposed to his testimony at trial, I think that these things were particularly harmful. We know the court gave no curative instructions. This misconduct, we know there were 42 instances where the prosecutor injected his own credibility into trial. 10 times he used the phrase thick as thieves. 8 times he called him a savvy criminal.
Did he use the expression savvy criminal in the closing argument or just in the rebuttal closing?
Closing argument and rebuttal closing argument.
So when he used in the closing argument, of course, there was no objection to it.
Correct.
There was no request for any kind of curative instruction with
Correct.
Respect to it. Was there any response by the defense counsel?
Defense counsel responded.
The phrase savvy criminal?
Yes, defense counsel did try to mitigate the damage by spinning that phrase and by changing that phrase and saying, would a savvy criminal really do this? As you pointed out, would a savvy criminal really return the stolen laptops later? But I think, again, you know, defense counsel is allowed to respond. And once improper arguments are made, she had no option but to try to mitigate the harm that had been done by this phrase at that point in time. And as the Supreme Court said in Wen, you know, we shouldn't allow the defendant to be penalized by defense counsel's failure to object at trial. On the second point, I really wanted to respond to your question, Judge Richman, which related to should the jury have received an instruction relating to complicity. I think that you honed in on what the issue really is in this case. Pursuant to those instructions, the jury was confused based on the responses that they were given. When does this crime end? When is the crime of theft complete? And they needed an instruction which would have informed them that the crime of theft is complete as soon as the goods were taken by Navarez, by Carlson, and by Martinez, and they were removed from the house.
All right, so, and people say that the use of the past tense expresses that to the jury. You disagree with that?
I do, because I think that the thing that the jury was really hung up on was that phrase, all or part of the crime. They were confused, well, when does the crime of theft end? And if they had been instructed, as defense counsel had requested in response to that third question, that yes, receiving stolen goods is a separate crime from theft, then this would have clarified matters for the jury in a concrete and unambiguous manner. And by failing to do so, the jury may well have convicted Mayo because they believe that he got involved in facilitating the crime, or he learned about the crime when the goods were placed in his car on the way to the pawn shop, or even pawning goods.
That would be insufficient evidence to convict, right?
Well, yeah, I guess
but
it would
be. But you didn't argue that.
That's correct, I did not.
Okay.
So if this court has nothing further at this time, I just would respectfully request that this court would reverse Mr. Mayo's theft conviction.
All right, thank you, counsel, for your excellent arguments. The case will stand submitted and a written opinion will issue in due course.